Hello, and welcome to Rabble Radio. It's Friday, April 22nd, 2022. I'm your host, Brianne Doyle. Thanks so much for tuning in. Rabble's got its finger on the beat of the issues that matter to you. If you're curious about the latest news in Canadian politics, labor, environment, or social justice, you've come to the right place to find the stories that matter to you, free of corporate influence. This week on the show, Graham Flint of the Reform Gravel Mining Coalition in Ontario joins Doreen Nicol to talk about the importance of gravel reform in Ontario. The province has authorized annual extraction limits over 13 times the actual amount of gravel used in Ontario annually. This calculation does not account for the 15% of aggregate sites that have been granted unlimited extraction tonnage limits. 160 million tons of aggregates are produced each year. That amount of aggregate could fill enough trucks to circle around the entire world six times. Enough is enough, so says the Reform Gravel Mining Coalition. The Demand a Moratorium Now petition, or the DAM petition, looks at the new approvals for gravel mining in Ontario. The purpose of a moratorium is to allow time to conduct a consultation process to chart a new path forward. The consultation includes speakers from Indigenous nations, affected communities, and independent experts and scientists. Flint is a professional engineer and environmental activist and organizer in Ontario. In 2004, he and others founded FORCE, that is, Friends of Rural Communities and the Environment, which successfully stopped the creation of what would have been Ontario's third largest limestone quarry in rural Flamborough, now part of Hamilton. He then served as president of Gravel Watch Ontario for 6 years. Now he is the chair of the Reform Gravel Mining Coalition in Ontario, and he's also a member of the Water Watchers Gravel Mining Study Group. Doreen Nicol is a social activist, freelance writer, and frequent contributor to Rabble.ca. In 2016, she won the Hamilton Independent Media Award for Social Justice and Human Rights. She has kept a close eye on the Reform Gravel Coalition as it's built up momentum this year. Here are Nicol and Flint in conversation. Take a listen.
Graham, welcome to Rabble Radio. I thought listeners would be interested in hearing how you became involved in the movement to reform gravel mining in Ontario. So could you give us a little bit of the backstory?
I mean, I've been doing gravel mining activities for about 18 years now. My baptism in it was when I came back from overseas. I was working overseas with a high-tech company, came back to Ontario and settled in rural Ontario, just outside of Milton. And literally 6 months after we moved in, we got notice that there was a proposal for a large limestone quarry, literally in my backyard, adjoining property to where I lived. It was a shocking experience. The battle went on for 9 years. Community raised hundreds of thousands of dollars. You know, at various stages, we had up to 6 different legal processes going on. It was amazing. And I was shocked by what I found. I was shocked at the one-sidedness of the gravel mining industry in terms of the preferential treatment it gets in a regulatory environment, the arrogance, the weight that it throws around. It really shocked me. Anyway, we were successful, and our proponent packed up his bags and left. So the next thing I did for 6 years is I got involved with a group called Gravel Watch Ontario, tremendous organization that really helps individual communities across Ontario deal with the journey through an aggregate gravel mining situation. Tremendous work that they've done. Honestly, I was sort of burnt out of that. And I sort of left in 2020, thought that I had seen my last of my gravel days. And the Water Watchers tapped me on the shoulder and said they were putting a working group together to look at launching a gravel mining initiative in Ontario. The premise being that a lot of these situations were local. Individual community groups were struggling with their own municipalities, trying to get a fair outcome. You know, and what they were dealing with were these, you know, multinational corporations with lots of experience and lots of experts and that kind of stuff. It truly was a David and Goliath type situation. And we felt that if we could elevate this issue to a higher level to get some of the themes and some of the, frankly, the injustices on the table and raise it to a provincial level, that maybe we could finally, you know, get some improvement in the gravel mining situation in Ontario. So that's been the arc for me. And it's been a tremendous journey. And I'm quite excited about what the coalition is up to.
In February, you actually launched the DAM campaign. What a great name. Demand a Moratorium Now. And the campaign highlights lack of provincial regulations and oversight that's not in place to safeguard communities and the environment from the detrimental impacts of gravel mining. So why is a temporary prohibition on new gravel mining licenses needed now?
You know, we think that our dam campaign, it has a catchy name, we're having some fun with it, but we think it's such a reasonable request. I mean, gravel mining, for instance, it's a contributor to the bigger issues we're dealing with when you think about, you know, climate change, biodiversity loss, all those kinds of things. I mean, gravel is the feedstock for the cement industry, which is a huge contributor to greenhouse gases on a global basis. So you know, there's a lot of reasons why now is a good time to do this. And I bring up the aspect of climate change, A, because it's relevant wouldn't consider gravel, but it's also, they have a metaphor. This is that if the bathtub is overflowing with water and it's spilling all over the floor and that kind of stuff, I mean, yeah, you're going to have to mop up all the water that's on the floor. You're going to have to drain the water out of the tub. But the very first thing you do should be to turn off the tap, right? Don't let more water go into the tub. And that's kind of how we're approaching this whole gravel mine reform issue. The first thing you should do if we're going to reform the gravel mining industry in Ontario is stop issuing new licenses. Stop getting more acres of Ontario scarred by this industry. Stop putting more communities through the pain and aggravation and frankly, financial hardship of trying to protect their communities from this industry. So that's why the dam campaign is what it is. Demand a moratorium now. Let's stop doing more approvals for the gravel mining industry.
I do have a list of a few municipalities west of Toronto that are challenging proposed quarries right now. Burlington, where a proposal was squashed 9 years ago, they're reproposing a quarry that will be built on the UNESCO heritage site that's also home to endangered Jefferson salamanders. Then there's Rockwood, Acton, Campbellville, Puss Lynch, which is quite close to Guelph. They're also appealing the gravel industry over property tax. Maybe we can talk about that. Wilmot Township, which currently has 7 quarries operating at 10% capacity, they want to add an 8th across the road. And North Shore Township, that proposed site will be built on the home of endangered Blanding turtles. So these are just a few quarries, and at least 6 of them are within 45-minute drive of each other. And these municipalities may want to protect their communities. In fact, they do, including well water, farmland, natural habitat, but they're handcuffed by the provincial restrictions. Could you explain what those restrictions are? But also, I see that these townships and municipalities are standing up and voting to support your moratorium, which is amazing.
Yeah, the support that we've received from the municipal level of governments across Ontario has been outstanding. And I think it really speaks to the decades of frustrations that these municipalities have faced in dealing with the gravel mining industry. It's been quite eye-opening to listen to the municipal officials speak about their experiences. Yes, all those sites are ongoing. At the time of this podcast, Wilmot just had a tremendous breakthrough. I mean, their municipality just voted down an application, right? And some of the things the councillor said at that one tie into your question in this area of discussion. One of the councillors said, you know, we're being told by our planning staff and the applicant makes the same point that we've done everything we're supposed to. We've checked all the boxes, right? You know, this application should be approved. And she made the point, well, maybe we're not asking the right questions. Maybe the right boxes aren't on the list. And one of the examples I would give you is we have a policy in the provincial policy statement. So the highest level planning doctrine that directs how land use is supposed to be managed in Ontario, that says in regards to the gravel mining, the aggregate industry, that there's no need to show need for a new pit or quarry, that as much gravel shall be made available as possible, and that no discussion of whether it's needed or not shall be allowed. That's an amazing, and I would say absurd, proposition in this day and age. I mean, gravel mining is not a benign activity. I mean, it fundamentally destroys the existing natural environment. It can never be recreated and put back together again. It's truly the Humpty Dumpty, you know, fell off the wall, broke the egg, never go back together again. And it damages communities. I mean, the issues around around noise and dust and trucks and traffic and that kind of stuff. People don't want to live next to a gravel mine for a good reason. It degrades the quality of life. I mean, it's an inherent industrial operation, and it just is what it is. The councillors in Wilmot, when they declined the application, made that point. You know, we get told that they're going to mitigate this and deal with that, but the reality is that these are intrusive operations with lots of negative impacts. So communities across Ontario are saying enough is enough. I mean, these are the other statistics. We haven't talked about this yet, so let me put this on the table. Right now, the province has issued licenses to the gravel mining industry to produce 13 times the amount of gravel that we actually consume each year. So it's huge. All right, so they've given out a lot of licenses. Well, what's the problem with that? Well, those licenses then lead to, if you look over a 20-year average, an average of 5,000 extra acres of land being turned over to the industry every year. I mean, that's huge. And then if you take it down even further, the actual land that's disturbed, the amount of excavation's been done, that the topsoil, the living soils, natural environment have been scraped off, the amount of land that's been disturbed by the industry has gone up by 67% over the last two decades. So it's huge. So we have lots of licenses that leads to a lot of lands being licensed that then leads to lands actually being disturbed. And here's the kicker. The amount of aggregate that we use in Ontario really hasn't varied very much. It's about 165 million metric tons per year. It goes up and down by about 3 to 5% year over year. If you look in the last 20 years, which is the area we have the best data for, in the first part of the decade, from 2000 to 2010, we used about 168 metric tons per year. In the last part of the decade, we've only used 157 from 2011 to 2020. So it's actually gone down. But the scarring on the landscape, the amount of land that's been disturbed has all gone up. Remember, 67% extra land disturbed, but we're actually using less gravel. And the industry always says that, we need gravel because the province is growing. And I apologize for all the numbers, but the final statistics I'd offer your listeners is that during that period from 2000 to now, Ontario's population went from 12 to 15 million, went up by 25%. So this cry that, Ontario's growing, we need more gravel. Historic data shows that that's not necessarily the truth, that the amount of gravel we use is the same or in short terms declining. So why are we issuing more gravel licenses? Again, more reasons for a moratorium. We don't need more gravel licenses.
Maybe we could take a look at the property tax, because I found that really interesting.
It's an ongoing issue. There are still legal proceedings that are going on with Wellington County. Push Lynch Township was kind of the marquee case. Wellington County is leading the charge on this kind of stuff. My understanding is they've been through some of the assessment review board, the administrative hearings within the MPAC system. And they're at the point where they're now at court with each other. And I think they're actually challenging MPAC. I think MPAC's taken Wellington to court. This is such a tragic situation. What's happened is that during the last sort of tussle back and forth, MPAC came out with a ruling that led to situations in Push Lynch Township where a single family home on a small rural acreage pays more property tax than a 100-acre commercial industrial gravel mine. That's ridiculous. That's not what it should be. And people need to realize that when it comes to municipal property taxes, it's a zero-sum game. If one group of people pay less taxes, other group of people have to pay more taxes, because basically the way they set those mill rates is they look at the budget for the year and they spread it out over the tax base. So the industry is basically getting a free ride on the backs of residents and small businesses that are in the community. It's truly unfair.
And yet they're contributing so much to traffic on the road, pollution in the air. Can we talk about the truck traffic? Because I don't think people who don't live near one of these quarries really understand it.
It's one of the most tragic issues. Is people sort of say, okay, so there's a prospect of a gravel mine going into my community. What's that going to be like? I mean, the people that are very close to it get impacted by the dust and the noise and the vibration and that kind of stuff. But what everybody in the community gets hit with is the truck traffic. Large, slow-moving vehicles. I mean, that's their nature. They're big, heavy, bulky vehicles. It's hard for them to get going. It's hard for them to stop. Their turning radiuses are difficult and that kind of stuff. And it's a shared responsibility. that the community faces. What tragically happens in a lot of these situations is people get frustrated and they try to pass the trucks and stuff like that. And it's a tragic outcome, right? Accidents and people get hurt. What we find frustrating too about this is that a lot of the quarry operators, a lot of the aggregate gravel miners and that don't take responsibility for the trucking. You know, they're independent haulers. You know, once they get the load loaded and they make sure that the load leaves the property, you know, maybe with its tarp down and the other conditions that it needs to have, they take sort of a hands-off attitude with it. But it's their operation that's bringing all this truck traffic to the community. There have been some issues in Halton region. I think they've somewhat calmed down now, but a decade or so ago, they had problems with trucks queuing up in the morning to get that first load because, you know, these people earn their living by delivering the product, you know, a ton mile of hauled product from point A to point B. So they can get an extra load in at the morning or at the end of the day. They really want to be able to do that. That's not a criticism of them. That's the nature of the business that they're in. But they would line up nose to tail across people's driveways, down people's streets, you know, idling for hours or so before the quarries actually opened. As I said, they've gotten some of that under control now, but it was a huge problem for the longest of time. And these are the issues. Trucking is one of those ones that, you know, seems innocent in some ways, but it's excessive. And it's more than chipped windshields from a stone being thrown up every now and then, though that happens as well. It bubbles into all these other areas in terms of even air quality along trucking routes, right? Is negatively impacted by all the diesel exhausts from this constant haulage of trucks. You know, it's not uncommon to in some of these larger operations, when we look at the proposals for them and we do the analysis, of ending up with, you know, dozens of trucks per hour. And you always got to remember it's two trips. It's in and it's out. So even if you just take the volume of product they're producing divided by, you know, what a truck can haul, you know, 15, 20 tons or something like that, you'll get one number, but you always have to multiply that by two because they're in and out all the time.
And let's talk about blasting below the waterline.
I mean, blasting is you know, extreme cases. The language of gravel mining and pits and quarries is very, very specific. Pits are where gravel really comes from. And that by nature is loose materials that are dug up, you know, riverbed bottoms, till from glacial moraines and things like that. The gravel, the stone, really comes from solid formations of rock that needs to be blasted and then crushed into the final product. And so that blasting activity is, you know, brings a whole nother dimensions to the situation. There's the actual blast itself, which, you know, can cause vibrations and scare people. There's a lot of concern being raised about the concept of fly rock, which is rock that flies out as a result of in an uncontrolled way from blasting and that. And there's actually been some interesting revelations about that. We're still drilling into this, but there seems to be some vagary around, you know, what are the qualifications for these blasters to do it. We've been told it's a voluntary licensing program they need to go through. And that raises a fair bit of alarm in my mind that if it's voluntary. So we're not at the bottom of that, but it seems quite concerning. And we also seem to hear that this fly rock happens more often than we realize. It just hasn't created a horrific situation yet, but that's the nature. What's fairly new that's going on is there've been a couple of proposals to do blasting underwater, which isn't something that's commonly done in Ontario. So basically when they blast and they're working below the water table, they do a process called dewatering, where they pump all the water from the floor of the quarry and discharge it into a stream or some other waterway, which has a whole bunch of issues associated with it as well, in terms of changing the chemical composition of the stream and the temperature of the stream. Like it's not a benign operation. It seems easy, pump the water, put it here, but no, it's not as straightforward as it seems when you look at it through an ecological lens. But these latest proposals are to blast beneath the water level. So not dewater the operation, let it stay full of water and actually blast under the water. Frankly, you know, we have a lot of concerns about that because it's just, we don't have enough experience with it. You know, I'm an engineer, but I'm not a mining engineer. I'm not an aggregate engineer, but I can tell you from just, you know, my rudimentary education, you know, water conducts vibrations and energy a lot more than air does. It's a denser media. So, you know, I would think that there's a lot of exploration that needs to be done for these underwater operations. And I think this is a new technology that deserves some real investigation and a cautious approach.
So how can people support this damn campaign?
Well, first of all, we're super excited about the amount of support that we have. I talked to you earlier about the municipalities. Again, at the time of having this talk with you, we're up to 11 municipalities across Ontario that have signed on. And if you don't mind, I'm just going to read them off because I'm so proud of them. But started with Halton Hills, then there was North Dumfries, Pushlinch Township, Milton, Cambridge, the region of Peel, Woolwich, North Shore, Zora, Wilmont, and Melanchthon. Those are the ones that are absolutely firm on. We're still trying to confirm whether Armathon and Mulmer have done it. We even think that maybe Cowden's done a motion. We're actually having trouble keeping up with it. So you know, it's wonderful. And as Ontarians, visit the Reform Gravel Mining website, and we actually have a toolkit now to help you take to your local municipality a motion package. So it has all the pieces you need. It has the draft motion from Halton Hills, the community that started this, and presentation material and some talking notes on that. So you can try to get a motion in front of your local council to get support from that. If you haven't signed our petition, please do so. Again, the Reform Gravel Mining website, there's a petition there saying that you call for a moratorium. Stop making this thing worse. Turn off the tap. We're up to 5,700 signatures, but we'd like to see that continue to grow. If you're a member of a community group, please join our activities. Sign up your community group. You can go to our website on the Who We Are page and fill in a form indicating that you'd like to support our work, and we'll move forward. And finally, you know, we have an election coming up in June. A lot of what we've been talking about today is, you know, a provincial area of control. They're the ones that sets the rules and determines how this thing moves forward. You know, I would ask every individual, particularly if you're a rural individual, when a candidate comes to your door and asks for your vote, ask them what they're going to do about gravel mining in Ontario. Right? It's one of many issues I think we will all have to consider when we make our voting decisions in June, but it's an important one, I think, for the rural area. And I think we're raising this issue to the point now where I think we have some traction. And I think in some communities, you know, this could be a differentiating factor for someone deciding where they cast their vote. So that's the spectrum, right? Help us with the motions, sign the petitions. If you're a group, sign up. And then everybody, think about this when you go to the polls in June, because it's the province where this thing is going to get fixed.
Thank you so much for coming in today, Graham.
Thanks for having me. I've really enjoyed the chat.
That was Graham Flint of the Reform Gravel Mining Coalition in Ontario with Doreen Nickel. Thanks so much for that, Doreen and Graham. Now it's time for a segment we like to call In Case You Missed It. This week on Rabble, we recognized Earth Day with three unique pieces. Dr. Peter Quinby has spent 40 years working as a scientist in the field of ecology and natural heritage science. In his piece this week, he argues that while it may feel hopeless at times, individuals do have power when it comes to creating environmental sustainability. No matter how big or small, your contribution to maintaining the ecological integrity and biodiversity of this incredible planet that we all depend on will make a difference. Particularly when the cumulative effects of all efforts are realized, he writes. Meanwhile, Rita Wong reflects on how she remains hopeful in the face of mass climate destruction. It is crucial to not give up, Wong writes. As long as the rivers flow and the ocean regulates our climate to keep it livable, we have to keep going too, and remind one another of how we depend on the Earth's health. In the piece, she encourages readers to support those who do the work to save our planet, in particular the many Indigenous communities across Canada. I invite everyone who has ever made a land acknowledgement to support Indigenous-led efforts to protect the land and waters, Wong writes. Collective action grounded in respect for the land and its peoples is needed for us to improve our chances of having a livable planet in the decades to come. Rounding out our Earth Day coverage is a piece from Emma Louie. Louie highlights a company she volunteers with called Biblioterre. Biblioterre is a land-based cooperative near Wakefield, Quebec. Biblioterre is developing projects that will help address the climate crisis, destruction of lands and waters, and injustices of colonialism and capitalism. Biblioterre brings people together who have a deep love for land, water, and animals, a commitment to justice, and a belief that another world is possible, Louis writes. In Canadian politics, Stephen Wentzel reported on a petition to fast-track a bill for a new Canadian disability benefit. The bill aims at providing Canadians with disabilities a minimum guaranteed income. The petition to fast-track the bill has received support from 70 MPs from nearly all parties, including the Conservatives, Liberals, Bloc Québécois, the Greens, and an independent MP. The petition has been championed in the House of Commons by Kitchener Centre Green Party MP Mike Morris. Morris hopes that the broad support the petition has received in the House will see the Liberals choose to act on the issue. Like anything else, it's really important to focus time as parliamentarians where we do agree and where constructive progress can be made, he said. It just continues to make the case that this legislation needs to be prioritized. In February, the Green Party criticized the Liberals for promising to pass a Canadian disability benefit in their 2021 election campaign and then not including that promise in their 2021 throne speech or in the budget that was released earlier this month. Also on the site, Carl Nirenberg warns that some Canadians may want to cancel plans to travel to the States. On Monday, Florida-based U.S. District Court Judge Kimball Mizell threw out the U.S. federal government's mask mandate for all passengers and crew on commercial aircraft and other types of passenger transport, including buses and trains. Nirenberg writes, "Many trips from Canada require transiting through the U.S. or transferring from a Canadian to a U.S. airline. Canadians who want to stay safe and who had come to see air travel as a relatively low-risk prospect now have to reevaluate that risk." On April 20th, the U.S. Justice Department announced it would appeal Judge Kimball Mizell's ruling if the Center for Disease Control deems it necessary to maintain the mask mandate. You can catch all of these stories and much, much more on rabble.ca. And finally, Rabble is toasting to 21 years of progressive independent media. Since April 18, 2021, Rabble.ca has proudly maintained a focus on labor and worker rights, grassroots activism, and a progressive analysis of national politics. This Monday, April 18th, we celebrated our 21st anniversary. If you're a fan of the show and would like to celebrate with us, we'd love you to consider making a donation. Please visit our website for more information, or if you're listening on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, simply click the link in our description. And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thanks as always for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please rate, review, share Rabble Radio with your friends. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. Follow us on social media across channels at RabbleCA. If you've got feedback for the show, ideas, stories, opinions you'd like us to cover, I'd love to hear about it. Get in touch with me anytime at editor@rabble.ca. Thank you to Stephen Wentzel and Carl Nirenberg for their reporting this week, and to Carl, too, for supplying the music. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on rabble.ca. And lastly, thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. Shout out to the listeners at CKTZ 89.5 FM on Vancouver Island, British Columbia this week. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week.